What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line I got my almost pick-and-pop partner, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
We're coming back, baby.
Ooh, are you ready to pick and pop, though?
Absolutely. I've been ready for the last 3 months.
My man. ISO Raj, are we still calling you ISO Raj here?
We're almost there in Ottawa.
Are you going to let go of your isolation?
Well, I think everyone's just enjoying the sun, and I don't want to lose out on any potential hoops, so I might hit a court or two in the next couple of days.
Yeah, you're going to join me soon.
Yeah, maybe.
Just a little tip for you guys. You know when you're looking for courts? I don't know if you did this, but I went to my court the other day, and it was, like, packed. There were at least four people on every net, so I was like, nah, I'm out. Instead of Googling, like, you know, city courts or that kind of, or, like, outdoor basketball courts, I just looked up public schools. Because they're usually empty, right?
That's where I went to. I found a public school that had like a hidden basketball court, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's what I did too, and it was dead. It was beautiful. Had the whole place to myself, man.
I had shade too.
Oof, that's a luxury. Oh, that's nice. That's a luxury. Yeah. It's like 40 degrees out here.
Can't touch that frail white skin of yours, eh, Josh?
Oh my god, I'm burning so easily now. I was outside for like 2 hours the other day at like 6 o'clock at night, and I turned into a lobster.
Seriously?
Yeah. It's bad, man. I used to be able to tan, but not anymore.
Now you just burn?
Pretty much.
Get yourself some sunscreen, man.
I do, and it doesn't help. I'm just too white. There is such a thing as being too white.
Yeah. Yeah, we've seen it. It's okay. All right, guys. It looks like the NBA might be coming back sooner than we thought. I think the tentative date is like mid-July at this point, right? Oh, I mean, we've all heard Orlando seems like the spot that it's going to be. There was talk of Vegas for a while, but I think they squashed that pretty quickly, to be honest. And now the idea of doing a campus, not a bubble, but a campus at Disney World seems to be the leading vote getter, right? So you're going to have X amount of teams there. Obviously, the NBA will want to continue to test, also to quarantine their players as much as they can. And then if somebody gets sick, that person is just, you know, out. You have 14 days. That's it. No questions asked. But now we got to figure out how to go ahead with that. You know, there's going to be questions about whether you want to continue on with the season or not, whether we just go into the playoffs. What kind of lead-in do we do? Like, you know, these guys have been off for, right now, we're counting at 2.5 months. It's going to be longer. Do you get them to practice with each other? Do you play a few games to finish off the season? There's a lot of factors that are going to go into this, right? And I want to see what everyone has to say. Obviously, there's a lot of research going on right now. I think the GMs are going on a call on Thursday, and then the owners are hopping on a call on Friday to, I don't know, maybe push it forward a bit more. So it looks like there's a lot of traction behind this, but we got to figure something out. Josh, what do you think is a logical step? Like, how would you go about this?
I think in terms of the players all getting their money, I think all 30 teams have to be involved. I know ideally it's not the greatest situation with that many players being in one specific area, but in order to, you know, get the TV contracts, I think they have to reach a certain amount of games in order for, you know, the players to get paid out in full as well as the owners. So I think that you'd have to play at least 5 to 7 games or so to get to that mark. I think it's like around 70 games in total.
It's 70 games on the dot for local TV money.
Yeah, so that's what, an extra 7-8 games, depending on, you know, how many games the team has played. So I would do that first, and just tell the players, like, if you want to, you know, get your full salaries, then this is going to be happening. And then from there, I would have a play-in tournament. So I would basically eliminate all the Eastern Conference teams besides the top 8, because nobody's really close to getting the 8 seed. I mean, Washington's 5 games back, and they had a really hard schedule, you know, the rest of the year if it should have played out. So they were not going to make it. So just eliminate them, and then have, I don't know, this is an idea that has, you know, gone around the last week or so, but you have the top 8 teams in the West, and then you have the 4 teams that are fighting for the 8 spot, from seed number 9 through seed number 12, right? Including San Antonio, Portland, New Orleans, and who am I missing?
Sacramento,
yeah. So have those 4 teams. Essentially, with the 7 and 8 seeds, with Dallas and Memphis, sort of like play in a play-in tournament. I'm not exactly sure how that would go. I think you have to give an advantage to Dallas and Memphis in that situation, but maybe have like a round robin type of play and then somehow give an advantage to Dallas and Memphis in that situation and then have the teams play for those last two seeds and then go into it with, you know, this regular 16 teams after that.
Would you reseed the 16 teams though?
Yes. So I would do it as they've been talking about the last few days on ESPN, where you have no East and Western Conference. You just have the best records go against the worst. And I guess in this case, you would obviously have Milwaukee and Orlando, but after that, it would be more so based on who got in with the play-in tournament. And I would still I guess at that point, you would also have LA against Brooklyn. And then after that point, it would be based on record and who got in with the play-in tournament.
Yeah, so I have a few objections to like what you're saying. And I think it comes down to just the number of games. And then also, if you're making Memphis and Dallas play in a play-in tournament and you're not making Brooklyn and Orlando in the East, like I think there's a huge disparity there. And also, some of those teams would have to play additional games with the play-in tournament. So I think, I don't know, like on paper it looks good, but I think logistically there's a few holes with that plan.
Actually, you know what? Going back, I would also include those last two Eastern Conference teams. I'm not sure why I didn't include them. So they would also be in there as well. Maybe have all the teams besides Dallas and Memphis play down to the last two teams and then have, you know, a play-in based on those last four teams, Dallas, Memphis, plus the two teams that won a one-game round robin between the other four teams. So make it like a really exciting one-game event to actually get into the four-team round robin and then have those four teams play against each other. And I'm not sure how you give the advantage to Dallas and Memphis at that point, but, you know, they're probably good enough teams anyway. They'd probably win anyway, but, you know, I would have that.
Yeah, I still have a big issue with the whole, like, I understand, like, the whole reseeding the playoff picture 1 through 16 just to allow that the teams that have the better records to have a bit more of an advantage because they're not going to have that home court advantage. But I look at kind of the way the NBA can go about this, and all the teams have played between 63 and 67 games. So the minimum number of games that a team like San Antonio would have to play is 7, and the maximum number is 7 and the minimum is 3. But I think each team should play 72 games. And then what you do is at 72 games, you re-rank the entire both conferences together. You take the top 18 teams. Teams 15 and 16 will play teams 17 and 18 for the last two playoff spots and a best of three. And that's how I would do it. And that would force Orlando and Brooklyn to still be very competitive, even though they were in the Eastern Conference. And it wouldn't punish teams like New Orleans and Sacramento, who were both 3.5 games back, and they had, I believe, one or two games on Memphis as well. So I would like it that they would take the top 18 teams, the bottom four teams play each other in a best of three, and then to minimize the length of the series in the first round, I would want best of five. Because I find that even the NBA, before when they were having the best of five for the first round, it was just like a lot more condensed of a series, and a lot of those series are lopsided. If you have like a team like Milwaukee end up playing a team like Orlando, like I don't want to see four games of that when I can see three.
Do you want them, like the remaining teams, to come back for to finish off this for 72 then first, and then you go into that?
Yeah, so the way it would work is every team would hit 72 games, and let's say a team's already hit 72, but they're scheduled to play another team that's supposed to has only played 70 on their schedule, they just wouldn't play them. It would be the next team that hasn't played 72 games. So as soon as you hit your 72 game cap, you're done. And I know that's an arbitrary value, but I don't think playing the extra 12 game or 10 games is very valuable at this point. And realistically, the teams aren't going to get money from home games and revenue from home games. So the best teams record-wise in the NBA should be in the playoffs. That's why the conferences should be thrown out, because there is no home court. There is no revenue. That's why five games doesn't make, like, it doesn't make a difference between five games and seven games, because five games, there's no like, oh, we're getting two home games guaranteed. Like, there's no home games. They're all neutral games.
Yeah, this is the perfect time to experiment and have the 1 to 16 And, you know, based on, you know, both of our different models, if we get more Western Conference teams in this, the playoffs will be so much better. So either way, I mean, there's always going to be negatives with any type of model that comes forward. They're probably going to have to vote on it, and there's going to be like, you know, 40% of the vote may go against whatever Adam Silver is going to put forward. But ultimately, the more Western Conference talented teams that get in, the less, you know, Brooklyn and Orlando types that get in, the better.
And just for a comparison, like looking at the standings right now, Brooklyn has 30 wins, so does Orlando. They almost have identical records. And Portland, New Orleans, Sacramento, San Antonio have between 27 and 29 wins. So this is completely fair game. San Antonio has They would have 9 games left under this proposed new schedule. And a team like Portland would have 6 games. And they have equal shot to make it. And as long as they're one of the top 18 teams, they play in the bottom four play in a play-in tournament, best of 3.
That's not bad. I kind of,
If you want to get into more specifics, I think the games should be played at 2 different gyms. You should play games. You'd have maximum 8 games a day. So basically, you're either a team one day or like you either play on like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, like you play every 2 days, and there'll be 8 games a day that way, and have them at like 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock. You're hitting both the Eastern and Pacific Coast, and kind of like how they do it with the Summer League.
It's pretty much like the first weekend of the playoffs, right? Like on any other year.
Yeah, exactly.
Or like you'll Christmas have, Day.
Kind of. Yeah, Christmas away. Day for like 2 weeks to pay off all those fans that have been suffering for like 3 months.
Oh, that's not bad. I'm skeptical about having all 30 teams show up for like the remaining, you know, in your case, you said up to 72 games, right? So that's like another 10 games. Josh proposed 5 games. I mean, what's the point of having a team like the Cavs show up for that many games? Because well, the national the TV money is already in.
Yeah, right. But it's the local money, and like they get a good significant payout as local, and all the teams have to have 70 local games.
Okay, so my question is, the local TV budget accounts to, on average, like 20 to 30 million, depending on the team. Obviously, some teams have bigger contracts, like the Lakers, but other teams like the Pistons, the Cavaliers, like, you know, whatever. Nobody really cares. So I'm assuming their budgets are a lot lower. Would it be... If I were an executive, like if I was ownership, would it be cheaper for me to just have my guys sit out in this case and not pay them for the remainder of the season?
I think the problem is the future, right? Like the cap, because if the cap goes way down, all these teams are going to be over the cap and they have to pay tax. I think they did a projection through ESPN where like 26 of the teams, based on what's happening right now, would be over the cap. Based on the projected cap of next year, which is like 20 million less of what it is right now.
So it would be like 90 million or something?
Yeah. Like a lot of teams are going to be way over, right, obviously. So, I mean, a lot of teams are over 110 million, obviously, and there's a few teams over 120, so they would be in deep, deep luxury tax, and there'd be a big problem with that.
So you want to... So the whole point is to get those 5 games in so that the TV money is like maximized, essentially?
Yeah, like you want to try to maximize your earning potential. And I think the more games, like the more tune-up games you can get in, the better condition these guys will be ready for in terms of like playing playoff games, which is like a whole nother level of intensity. And having more teams in will allow teams like the Lakers, Clippers, etc. to actually play somebody while these potential, you know, play-in tournaments are happening or round-robin tournaments are happening. Because those teams still need to play too. They can't just sit on the sidelines, because then the teams that are playing the play-in tournaments will have an advantage once they actually play those teams.
Okay, so hold on, sorry. My question, my reservation is whether if I were the Hawks, would I really send out Trae Young or Kevin Huerter, or am I gonna pull out like Wayne Bembry? You know what I mean? If I'm Minnesota, am I gonna put out Karl Anthony Towns, or is Jared Culver gonna play 48 minutes? Because I'm not playing my stars for that.
Yeah, I can see that point, and that would be a team by team decision, but I think there's a slight incentive for the players to play. That being said, like obviously if they get injured, it's a complete waste because it's literally for nothing. But teams always have to look for the future, and if they don't play their best players and their fans, hopefully in the future, whether it's next year or the year after, have to buy season tickets. Some players want to keep their skills sharp. You don't want them just sitting around not being in game shape. And eventually they will have to play, whether it's next season if it starts in December or like whenever it may be. And I think a lot of these players are itching to play, and it's again like the minimum number under the proposed my proposal of 72 games, it's between 5 and 9 games for each team. And I think it's important to have those teams like the Knicks, the Cavs play in this format, because it would be unfair to punish a team that had an opportunity to play some weaker teams because they've already played the strong teams, and that's why their record's a bit poorer. So if they had to play the Cavs twice out of their remaining 9 games, like, so be it for them.
And since, you know, we're trying to get more creative in a time where we should be trying to get creative to see what this would look like, I think you should do a reverse lottery for these teams if we're going to do, you know, 30 teams playing, to where you incentivize the crappy teams to win as many games as possible in order to get more ping pong balls. So I think with the crappy teams, you tell them, you know what, this whole regular season just happened. You're not going to make the playoffs, obviously, so now you're going to be playing for ping pong balls. So the more games that you win, the higher chance you have of getting in the top 3 in the lottery. So if you win 6 out of your 10 games that you're playing in, you know, Raj's system, then you're in the top 3 now, or in the bottom 3, I guess, in this case, of getting ping pong balls. Wow. Incentivize them to win. How about that? I mean, I know it's a novel idea, but I think that incentivizing these teams to actually win games will make the product more competitive. And then when you see it, you know, a Cavs-Lakers game, you're going to be like, yeah, I might actually watch this.
So I'm going to pull out Klay Thompson early from his injury so he can get me my extra few games.
That's the organization's decision at that point.
Yeah, and another alternative to that is while those bottom 4 teams are playing in their play-in tournament, you can have the remainder 12 teams play in a kind of round robin tournament to see who gets the first pick.
Yeah, the crappy bowl.
During that same period. Yeah, and do a small little tournament. It'd be the one seed plays the 12 seed, and it'd be one game. And if you advance, you just keep going on, and then basically you'd end up in a scenario where after 3 or 4 games, you'd have the entire draft lottery.
Or, like, give them a percentage, because I think you should still do the lottery. I don't think it'd just be based on, like, whoever wins that, you know, lottery bowl, they get the number one pick. I think it should just be, like, they have, you know, a 12% chance.
The best percentage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Do you think the players would buy into it?
I think, again, it'd just come down to, like, organizations making decisions, and some players wouldn't be down, and some would, and I think it's just making the best out of a very shitty and unfortunate situation.
Yeah, I mean, teams like Atlanta have come out and said that they want to play these games because they have players like, you know, Capella that they need to integrate into their lineups in order to gain some chemistry come December when the season hopefully starts again for next season, I mean. So these teams do have incentives to play these players because you can't really have like a 8 to 9 month layoff from playing basketball. And then come December, you might have a lot more injuries because these guys are just not in shape. So having an extra 10 competitive games to play might be beneficial, plus all the practices and scrimmages that they have to run too.
I don't know, man. I mean, an extra 10 games for a guy like Andre Drummond, who's in his contract year, might not do anything. And Cleveland would have even less incentive because, like, if they don't want to resign him, there's really no reason, right? And for him, it's like, I've already proven who I am. Everyone in the league knows what kind of center I am.
Has he, though? Look who he got traded for.
Like, 10... No, but what I mean is 10 games, 10 games isn't going to change much about your reputation. 10 games after quarantine is definitely not going to change your reputation for other GMs. So what gives incentive to those kind of players? I have nothing to do with this organization afterwards. If it were a normal year, we would be tanking and I would just be sitting anyways.
Yeah, but I mean, there's only a certain amount of teams that are going to have cap space, especially now, because you have no idea what the cap's going to be. And he's probably going to try to prove to Cleveland that he's going to be a centerpiece for them. So the better he plays, the better chance he has to get a somewhat decent contract, which is still unlikely based on how he's played the last 2 years, but we'll see.
That'd be wild. That, like, the reverse lottery
is probably the best incentive that I've heard in a long time.
Yeah, it's a good way of situation. It's a good way to making sure the bottom teams at least put some level of resistance. Like, you'd hate to be in a situation where in Memphis's last five games, they have to play like the Lakers twice, the Clippers once, Milwaukee and the Raptors, and then Sacramento gets to play like Washington three times and whoever, like the Knicks twice. Like, it, you want the teams that are in the bottom still have to have some incentive to play hard. And I also think, like, we didn't touch upon this, but I would want to hear what you guys think about reducing the first round to best of five.
No, they never do that.
That's a lot of advertising money.
Yeah, and but I think they're going to have lots of games, though.
It doesn't matter.
That's what they want.
It's still more like airtime, right? And right now, there's literally no other North American team sports running. NHL is on pause. NFL is way too early. MLB is not going to start anytime soon. So right now, the NBA has a full monopoly of North American team sports. So I would, like, if I were them, I would try to stretch it out as much as I can and recoup any advertising costs that they can get.
Yeah, and I really like the idea of implementing changes that actually might affect, you know, future changes as well. So, you know, the reverse lottery, to where maybe in the future you incentivize a team that, you know, is a 9 or 10 seed to have higher lottery odds instead of the team that's at the, you know, 15th seed instead. So you're actually still trying to make the playoffs and win, and if you do that, you get the reward of getting the higher percentage in terms of lottery. And then in terms of the 1 to 16, even though the biggest thing holding that back is the travel, once we get back to normalcy, I think that's the best outcome that you can possibly have for competitive basketball in the playoffs. And then you have new matchups that you get to see every year, even though there may not be as many rivalries, because you have, you know, you like to have teams playing against each other, unless you're like Utah and Houston and Philadelphia and Boston, who always seem to play against each other, even in this specific scheme that they're coming up with. Despite being 1-16, they're still playing each other, which is crazy. But you're not going to have as many rivalries, but overall, you're getting more quality teams in the playoffs instead of those crappy Eastern Conference teams that make it with 35 wins.
Man, you really don't like the East, eh?
Yeah, it's garbage. Like, you're like, who watched the Milwaukee-Detroit series last year, besides you?
What? They played last year?
Blake Griffin played in like three games, didn't he? With a broken leg or broken knee.
Yeah. Yeah, he played like 10 minutes a game or something nonsensical like that.
Yeah, so imagine like Milwaukee's playing New Orleans instead. That's so much better.
I think with the home court advantage, like, there is none. So I think there's no obstacle of saying like travel's an issue, or like, oh no, we played most of our games against the East. Like, if you want to make it in the playoffs and prove that you're the NBA champion, like, you have to go through some of the best teams in the league, and who cares if it's from a different conference? So I'm all for like changing it, especially in this scenario.
Yeah, I think changing it now is, you know, it's obviously doable, but I don't see it happening in the future.
If it's a big hit, it could happen.
Even if it is a big hit, though, I don't think ownership would, like, the East teams would never allow this to be permanent, because it would take away so many Eastern Conference teams that could be at the bottom of the barrel taking in playoff revenue.
Yeah, I wish there was a way that Adam Silver could just overrule them.
Nah, he's not going to. And he's Adam Silver is pretty much a representative of the owners, right? So he's like essentially their voice, and he's gonna do what they tell him to do. And the East is never gonna let that go. Like, how much money do you think Detroit has brought in over their last like two or three playoff runs out of squeezing out the eighth spot? You know what I mean?
It's two games, though. You know?
It doesn't matter, dude. It doesn't matter, man.
Such nonsense. Like, he should just implement a rule, or he can just overrule that nonsense and just say, you know what? If you want to be part of the playoffs, get a better GM and build your team properly. We're tired of you getting in with 33 wins. Enough of your bullshit.
Yeah. It's not going to change, my friend. There will be no veto actions here. Only on trades, not on playoff standing.
I bet you, though, if they actually implement the 1-16 this year, the first round is going to be the best we've ever seen.
You think so?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you have the play-in tournament, too, and you eliminate Orlando and Brooklyn, and you have the Western Conference teams in their place, and you get a Milwaukee versus, you know, whoever.
Hold on. Why are we assuming that Brooklyn would be out?
Because they suck.
Okay, you don't think KD's going to come back for this year?
No. There's no way.
Do you think Kyrie would come back?
No. Like, they're building for next year, right? Like, their whole plan was to have a championship-level team next year. So why would they take that chance? They're not going to win this year.
So we're going to see a playoff team led by Taurean Prince and Spencer Dinwiddie?
Yeah, don't forget my guy Karras as well. Karras is nice, but they're not going to beat any of the Western Conference teams if there's a play-in tournament. There's no way.
I don't know, man. The Spurs are pretty bad.
Yeah, but the Spurs might not be in the tournament. It could be, like, New Orleans New Orleans and Sacramento or Portland.
I think Portland would get in because then you'd have Collins and Nurkic back, right? They'd be a dangerous team. Like, you wouldn't want to face them even come playoff time. That's a tough team.
How pissed would you be if you were Dallas, where you've had a year of, like, overachieving on every standard, and then somehow you had to play in this bullshit play-in tournament?
Well, the funny thing is, like, Mark Cuban talked to ESPN yesterday, and he said he's all in favor of a 30-team tournament. So he's okay with Dallas being in the scenario.
Yeah, he's okay with 30 teams because it's, like, a fair position for everybody. But what happens when it's his team put together with a bunch of teams that are just trying to take that one or two spots? You know what I mean?
I think that was part of the article, though. I think he said he was fine with that. But he wants the 30 teams back. Like, that was a sticking point with him.
Yeah, I think also, like, especially in Dallas's case, there's no absolute guarantee that they would be that 17th or not 17th, but they would be one of the bottom four teams that has to play in. Because right now, yes, they're tied on wins with Houston and the Thunder. They've played three more games, but things can change. And if they have five or six games and they can jump up ahead of Oklahoma City, and it might be Oklahoma City and Memphis versus, like, two teams from the East.
Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. Okay, I want to ask you guys logistically. If you were to bring in, like, let's just go, like, assume that your 30-team idea works, right? Like, they bring everybody in. Each team, I think they said, like, traveling parties around 35 people plus, you know, let's say four family members, I'm guessing. Are you trying to limit these people to the confines of Disney World specifically?
Absolutely. Like, I think that's the reason they chose that venue. It's a huge area. It has enough space for entertainment in the terms of, like, restaurants. And you would have a few staff that worked at these restaurants that would stay there permanently for the 2 months. And if they were to leave, they would be replaced by some people who would have to isolate for 14 days prior to starting. And I think that's the reason it was chosen over Vegas, because Vegas is always going to have a bit more international traffic and there's always that risk. Plus, I don't think they would be able to lock down Vegas as they would be able to lock down Disney World.
Do we really think that NBA players would obey by these rules? Because the idea is that they've changed it from being a bubble where you're, you know, obviously strictly confined, right? Like, a dome kind of image is in everyone's mind, obviously, when you're a bubble. But it's more of a campus. It's more like you can come in and out as you want, or you're free to roam the grounds and that kind of stuff. Do we really think NBA players would listen to this? Like, I could see more than a handful of guys just walking out and be like, nah, I'm going to go for a drive somewhere. I'll be back. Don't worry. I'll get tested when I come back, but I'm going for a drive.
I don't think they would be allowed to. And I think it'd be as simple as that. And I honestly think it'd just be part of their contract. Like, the same way they're late for team meetings, like, this is just like a contractual obligation that they have to stay on the campus. And again, this is, like, bigger than any university campus, and you've been to Disney World, and they can easily host like 20,000 people at a given time, and all the teams combined wouldn't have that much. So I think it's possible.
I think it's going to be one of those unspoken things where, well, I mean, in the media anyway, but I think, you know, general managers and, you know, higher level executives are going to have a meeting with their players and be like, you know, if you go off site, there's going to be, you know, repercussions, especially if he gets one of our players sick and then we get kicked out of the tournament because of it. So it's going to be one of those things where it's not like black and white where they can't go off site. It's like a prison type of situation, which is, you know, something that Michelle Roberts has talked about. But it's like one of those wink wink things like you better not go off site and come back in and bring the virus with you or else something, you know, is going to happen to you, you know?
That's it. Okay. What about if I've been picking on the Cavaliers a lot, so I'm going to continue this trend. What if Matthew Dellavedova is like, no, screw this, I'm out. I'm going for a drive. Is somebody going to snitch on him?
It's not that. I actually think they're going to have much better surveillance. There'll be security, and if someone leaves the campus and enters again, they won't be allowed back in. I think that's how simple it would be.
No, there's no way that you're going to tell a player that they can't come back. Especially because you dragged them all the way to Orlando. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, not Dellavedova, but think of a relative star or a superstar. Think of if Gobert left. You're going to tell him that he can't come back in? There's no way.
Yeah, I think they would do that.
No. I guarantee you they wouldn't. They would test him, like, a lot, but there's no way you're going to say no.
Well, they'll
hit him with a bunch of fines. But they're not going to say, no, you can't come in. There's no way they close the doors permanently.
I think they do. If they bring them to Orlando, they give them everything they want. And if they have requests or whatever, I'm sure they can cater to them. And they basically do it like that. And no Dennis Rodman-like trips or vacations to Vegas halfway through the final series. Nothing like that.
Hmm. I don't know. I'm skeptical. We know how stubborn some players can be.
You know what they should do? They should make this also into reality TV, where they have an extra production crew from HBO or ESPN or whoever film all these guys ESPN. In the environment.
It's Disney owned, man. It's got to be ESPN. There's no way they're letting HBO get that money.
Yeah, it's gonna be ESPN or TNT.
No, Disney is owned by ESPN, man. Reverse that. ESPN's owned by Disney.
Yeah, but I think
they keep that money in house.
They will, but I think they're also going to let TNT, because TNT is contracted to get an X number of games as well. Like, they're the big NBA playoff sponsors.
Yeah, I think TNT would have their broadcast team, but if you want to set up like Josh's idea of having basically Big Brother, but at Disney World for NBA players.
Yeah, I'd be on that.
You gotta go with ESPN, yeah. Oh, we'd be streaming that 24/7.
No doubt.
Then the cap wouldn't go down, too, because you could put all the money back into the league through that, because everyone would watch it. You get more people watching that than you would the games.
Oh, yeah. The NBA is all about its personalities. We all know this. Okay, my next question for you guys. Say, let's pick Dallas, for example. Say Luka Doncic somehow contracts this disease once he's already inside. You know, so, whatever. Shit happens. Do you just take Luka out, continue the games, I'm assuming, right? You quarantine the guy for 14 days, wait till he has no more symptoms, da-da-da-da. Yep. Okay, now, on top of Luka, you have, who else is on Dallas? Like, Tim Hardaway Jr. gets it, Dwight Powell gets it, Maxi Kleber gets it. How many players on a team have to get it before you just take that team out? As we've heard, this virus is highly, highly contractible or contagious.
Yeah, so I think if they can't field any more players, so if they have more than four or five guys, then I think they're just out of the tournament.
Do you keep one of the other teams on standby in case? Would you just have New Orleans just hanging out somewhere, just waiting in case a team falls out? So they're like, we're in. Get that tag in.
Just have Orlando as the stand-in team because they're not going to make it in originally, and they're the hometown team.
They're at home already.
Yeah.
Aaron Gordon is sitting on his couch waiting for the call.
That's like the worst case scenario for the NBA is if an entire team gets sick. I think they can handle even one or two big superstars being sick. But if it goes through a team, I think what would probably happen if it goes through a team is they would just put the whole season on pause for 2 weeks. Because there's very likely if it's going through one team, it's probably happening to many other players.
Yeah. Josh. If you were one of the better, like one of the teams that's already in the playoffs, right? So say you're Toronto, Milwaukee, Boston, whatever. If you're one of the GMs for this team, would you even care about having a regular season, or would you just want, you know, there's been proposals that there are inter-team scrimmages, right, where you guys just run, get your legs under you, and then boom, straight into the playoffs. None of this 5-game or 7-9-game regular season nonsense. Just eliminate those teams. That way we have less people around, which means, you know, there's obviously half the likelihood of infection, half the tests are needed, less time, less expenses are going into it. You know, we're just going to go straight into the playoffs right now. Could you see any GMs saying that, just eliminating the bottom part? Because you would eliminate a lot of time and effort. And obviously it's a lot safer if you have 16 teams instead of 30 going into this confined space.
I think you can argue that the injury risk is higher than the coronavirus risk as long as players don't go off site, right? Because you have maybe a 3-week training camp. And then if you go straight in the playoffs, I think there's going to be a lot of injuries because, you know, as we know, guys play harder in the playoffs. It's just a proven fact. And, you know, star players especially play more minutes. So I think you need that tune-up. You need like at least 5 or 10 games in order for the players to get back in physical shape. Because I'm sure a lot of them are looking like Andre Miller right now.
You're the disrespect.
I really want to see what Nikola Jokic looks like right now.
Man, I love Andre Miller. Don't talk shit.
But he's like known for being a guy that never worked out in the offseason, which is why he was able to, you know, he'd come into camp, obviously, he'd be overweight and be out of shape, but he worked his way back in, but he had very limited amount of injuries at the same time. So yeah, I think a lot of players are going to be looking like pretty pudgy when they come back, but a lot of them aren't built, I guess, the same way as Andre.
When you can only jump like 3 inches into the air, you know, it's hard to get those kind of injuries.
Yeah, for sure. So he's not a very athletic guy, obviously, in comparison to your regular NBA player, but a lot of these guys that are sitting on the couch right now, they need the games in order to get back into game shape.
Okay, I think what I'm trying to say is, what would change the idea that this training camp of, or, you know, I don't want to call it training camp, but this regular season of 5 to 10 games, wouldn't players just treat it sort of like they treat preseason, where it's just, yeah, we're going through the motions. You can play me like 5, 10, 20 minutes a game tops, but why am I even trying for this if I'm a top 7 seed?
Well, I think in that case, you might have to put something on the line, which, you know, again, is very convoluted and we don't really know what they're going to do, obviously, but maybe you make seeding important. Maybe you add seeding to the equation.
It does matter, because if you're, let's say, a good example would be a team like Utah, like why would they want to try? Like they're pretty much secured to be one of the top 16 teams, but do you want to be number 13 or 14, or do you want to be number 7 or 8? And the difference could be 3 games between those teams. So I think there is incentive, because if you do want to make it further in the playoffs, then you want to play easier opponents and have an easier path. No one wants to go through the Clippers or the Lakers or Milwaukee.
Fair. Okay. Raj, have you heard this idea that some of these media personalities are putting out with like a World Cup style grouping stage? Have you heard about this?
Yeah, it's garbage.
you don't like it?
Yeah, I think it's just a terrible idea. I think the North American sports culture is very different than European. We have a regular season for a reason, and we play 82 games, and there's load management for a reason. And it's because the playoffs are a different animal. It's like almost a different game. We talk about that a lot on the podcast. So I think a group stage would be a bit silly. It could be entertaining, like in a video game, but I think overall people want to see best of 7 series. Although the fact that there's no home and away games makes things a bit more interesting.
So you wouldn't like it if we had, you know, I think the idea would be 4 or 5, like 5 groups, right? Or 4 groups, whatever, it doesn't matter, of 4 to 5 teams. And then each team plays every other team once. You gather up your points, and then that's how the seeding would rework itself. You don't like that idea? That way you would also like have 20 teams instead of 16. So let's just pick the top 20. You would throw in Portland, New Orleans, Sacramento, and San Antonio into this idea, right? So there's no need for a play-in tournament because all these teams would be included already.
Yeah, but you still need to include the other 10 teams to get your local TV money from every team. And yeah, you could say they play in a different groups, and then the winners, like the remaining 8 or 10 teams play in groups of five, like two different groups, and we can do the reverse lottery odds, and that would incentivize winning for those teams. But I just think you're punishing certain teams, and I think the great thing about basketball is it's hard to beat your opponents four times. Like it's a challenge in a series. When you play a team once, you can just catch them on a bad shooting day, or things can't be like things aren't working well. But beating them four times is a completely different animal. Like look what happened with the Clippers against the Golden State Warriors last year. They were able to beat the Warriors twice, and I know maybe the Warriors weren't giving it 100%, but if they catch them on one of those bad days, you're going to say that Golden State didn't deserve to make it and the Clippers did just because they won that one game?
Yeah, I mean, isn't that what happens with the World Cup, though? Obviously, the teams don't play each other every year, but it's the same idea, right? Like, that's the same thing as in any tournament, basically.
Yeah, no, absolutely, but then it just completely devalues the entire regular season.
I agree. I mean, that's what I would have been worried about for this whole year, right? Like, it seems that everything before March would just be scrapped.
Yeah, and like again, a good example would be a team like Milwaukee, right? Like if you put them in a group, and obviously the groups would be fair, like they wouldn't be with the other top teams, but Milwaukee could be in a group with like Philadelphia, Houston, Dallas, and let's say the Suns. And that would just be unfair because they could be another group, like the Clippers might be with like Indiana, the Spurs, like it's a bit shitty. And why would Milwaukee have to go through that when they were the best team in the NBA?
No, okay. All right. Okay. Now, if we're assuming that the standings stay the same, you know, we're going to rejigger everything. So we go 1-16, you get Milwaukee, Orlando, LA, Brooklyn, blah, 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 blah. Which series would you guys be most interested in watching? Like, which do you think would get the highest ratings? Which would draw your interest the most? You know, that kind of stuff.
In the first round?
If you have the first round.
So based on the 1-16?
Yeah, the current 1-16. So no Portland, no New Orleans, Sacramento, Spurs. Sorry, guys, you didn't play well enough throughout the year. I don't care. Let's just go with the current standings.
I'd say that Miami versus OKC would be very entertaining because they're sort of built the same kind of way. They're both very rugged teams, and they're pretty evenly matched. But, you know, the bias in me says Toronto-Memphis would be a lot of fun too. JV's revenge series.
Oh my God, this guy's saying highest rating.
I mean entertainment-wise but highest rating, yeah, whichever team the Lakers are playing, Brooklyn.
Yeah, no, not necessarily highest rating, but just in general. Like, where's the intrigue?
Yeah, for me, I guess it would be Toronto-Memphis. It'd be a very fast series. Get to see Ja Morant in the playoffs. And again, you know, seeing JV against his old team, he put up like 20-20s every game. It'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, Brandon Clark versus Chris Boucher.
A lot of Canadian content.
Brandon Clark, basically the improved version of Chris Boucher.
Brandon Clark's a beast, man. He's going to be one of the best big men in the NBA in a couple of years.
Maybe in like 2 years, yeah. Raj, what kind of series are you looking at here?
For me, I'm not as big of a homer as Josh is, so I'm going to go what looks the best on paper, and it has to be Boston-Philly. I think those teams, when they play each other historically, they've had some good matchups over the last couple of years. Both two young, talented teams with very high expectations. I think that series could go seven games if they end up doing seven-game series in the first round. And the other one has to be another classic, Utah-Houston. They always manage to play each other in the playoffs. Bleh, so you never know. This could be the year. Like Harden might be even more anti-clutch than he was before because he might be rested this time, so they might make a big playoff run, or he could be very out of shape.
Utah's dead in the water, no matter who they play. They lost Bogdanovich. Yeah, they're out.
Yeah, that's a huge loss. And, like, poor chemistry issues, let's be real. Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert are going to have zero chemistry on the floor, and those are two of your best players. They're dead.
Also, I just want to go on record. I just want to say that Philadelphia is still going to make the finals as long as they're healthy.
That would be interesting. I don't think so.
That would be a tough.
They don't have to go on the road anymore.
Tough road? Yeah, but they're.
They're always on the road.
They don't have a home team either. What do you mean?
I think that'll factor into things. I think they're one of the most like mentally weak teams in the NBA. So now that there's no fans in the stands cheering against them, I think you're going to see how good they really are.
No one's going to be egging on Ben Simmons to shoot a three.
He might actually start shooting threes now.
No, he's not. You know he's not going to.
No, I mean, this team was built for the playoffs. They're huge and they're physical, so they should do well, especially without the fans now, I think.
Yeah, Boston has really no size to go against that team either. That's what I would be worried about. Like, Daniel Tice is not going to be enough to stop Embiid and Horford at the same time. You know what I mean? That's tough. And Cantor is like a sieve on defense. So what? You're going to throw on the Time Lord? Come on.
Yeah,
Boston team's going to struggle.
I think it'll still be a good series, and I don't think Philly will make it to the finals. Just because if they ended up doing the 1-16 like we were talking about, they would be in the same bracket as the Clippers, and I don't think they're better than them. And Milwaukee.
You know what they should also do? They should also reseed based on who wins the series. So if the first seed wins their first round series and there's an upset in their bracket, they should have to play the worst seed that comes out of the first round. That's another change they should make going forward, I think. So why not experiment with that too?
That's what the NHL does, right?
Yeah, exactly. It should be like that.
Yeah, I don't think that's fair, because then Orlando literally has to have the hardest road. And I think I don't care about Orlando, but I think if you beat the number one seed, like that is a big enough achievement. Like, you don't have to go out and beat the Lakers the next round. Like,
why not?
That's just ridiculous.
Don't be so crappy in the regular season then.
No, but
make the regular season matter again.
Okay, if that was the case, then yes, that could make sense for the future. But I think for this tournament, no. Have a bracket system like the same way they do in NCAA. And if you win your matchup, you play the winner of the next matchup.
I think you should incentivize these teams, especially if you're going to have a regular season of, you know, 5-7 games or 10 games or whatever it is, to get the highest seed possible. And I think that's a good way to do it, and saying, you know, if you get a higher seed, then you get to play the crappiest seed going forward as long as you keep winning rounds. Or you get a bye if there's like a 20-team tournament.
A bye would be good. I would like that.
Yeah, like top four teams get a bye, and then, you know, the 16 teams outside of them have to play each other, and then come second round, those top four seeds play the worst seeds that come through.
Yeah, that 5-20 battle it out in the first round.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's a long.
You'll just give LeBron more rest time.
Nothing wrong with that. He deserves it. If he's a top two seed, then why not?
Yeah. That's not bad. I don't know. That'd be interesting. You wouldn't want to see... you guys aren't intrigued by Clippers-Mavericks? I think that's the one that's like popping out to me, man.
That's
Kawhi
a sweep.
And Luka. I don't think it would be.
Have you
sweep,
watched their games this year?
No, I haven't at all.
Yeah, it hasn't been pretty.
They lock him down, don't they?
They don't match up well at all against the Clippers. I mean, because they have two or three guys that can... You know, they can also switch on Luka, too. Like, Luka really excels when he has to play against a big man in the pick and roll. But if you can just switch on him, he's a lot less effective right now, which, you know, I think the series will be beneficial for him if it does actually happen, because he'll have to learn more moves one-on-one against, like, really athletic 6-7 guys. And that'll, you know, excel his transition into greatness, but they get swept for sure.
What about Denver-Indiana?
That would be fun. Nobody would watch it, but that'd be a great series.
No, that's by far going to be the least viewed series ever in NBA playoff history.
No, I wouldn't go that far. I mean, there was Milwaukee-Detroit last year. Let's be real.
Even during quarantine, somehow it'll be the least viewed series.
NBA nerds would love that series, though, because those teams are built sort of the same way, where they have like really strong starting fives and solid benches as well. They just have really good team depth, and they're fun to watch, too. So I think that would be a great series.
Denver far superior. Denver would be far superior.
Yeah, I don't know, man. With Oladipo back healthy, having, you know, 3 months of rest now, too.
Yeah, man, Miles Turner's punk ass isn't going to do anything against Paul Millsap. He's going to be like, oh, Paul Millsap's trying to body me. Ah, I'm out. Let me run to the three-point line and shoot up an air ball.
Wow, the disrespect. I like it.
Yeah, clearly I'm not a big fan of Miles Turner's game recently.
That'd be a fun series, though.
Too much conflict. It would be fun to see Sabonis and Jokic go at it. That would be sick.
I think it's a lot closer than you think.
Yeah, well, obviously. I'm obviously being a huge homer right now.
At least we're talking about basketball now, though. At least it's actually fun to talk about the matchups that are hopefully to come.
I'm literally wearing a Wilson Chandler Denver Nuggets jersey right now.
Nice.
Yeah, that's how much his homerism has gotten to me.
You get any props on the street when you go out like that?
Hell no. They're like, 21? Is that Jamal Murray's number?
Then they look at the back, they're like, Chandler? Who's Chandler?
Who the hell?
Tyson?
Chandler Bing? Tyson Chandler.
Didn't know he played for the Nuggets. Yeah. Hmm.
He did. Yeah. He was the starting center for them when Allen Iverson and Carmelo Anthony were there. Kind of looks like Marcus Camby. Might have been Marcus Camby.
Oh, yes, yes.
You like what I did there? Because they're basically the same player?
Well done.
Yeah. All right, well, it looks like we've almost solved this issue. I mean, I still don't like having all 30 teams come in just for health reasons and, you know, the potential for infection, but, I mean, if you need that 20 or 30 million per team, it's obviously a lot of money to take in. It's close to a billion, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of money, so they got to figure this out and quickly. So supposedly they're having meetings on Thursday, Friday, where we should learn a little bit more at least, and I think by next week we'll have a much better idea as to what's going to happen.
Josh, how do you think Masai the God would talk to other GMs in this situation?
I think he would go in, you know, full confidence, maybe take his pants off in front of them, be like, you know what, bring it on, let's go.
While he's on Zoom?
Absolutely. Masai doesn't care who Toronto plays. He thinks they're going to win regardless. So 1-16, 1-20, have a bye. It doesn't matter. Toronto's going to win the championship no matter what in his eyes.
So what you're telling me is Masai's going to go into the Zoom call, drop his pants, show everything, and be like, I don't care what you guys think. Oh, y'all trash. I'm Masai.
Pretty
fuck
much.
Brooklyn. Just keep on going. And then just hang up. Doesn't even need to participate for the rest of the call.
There's a reason why his nickname Leave is meeting. The God, right?
Wow, that would be intimidating.
They should be intimidated by him. I am.
Yeah.
And I'm not
meanwhile,
a GM.
Meanwhile, Pat Riley's sitting there with all his rings just quietly tapping on the table, just chilling, waiting.
Yeah, whatever. That old fart.
That's what I want to
see. Past his prime now. That old fart is, he can't build a team anymore.
He doesn't care. You know how, like, you can maneuver where your webcam goes? His is always just looking at his hand going like this as he taps his rings.
He probably has one of his staffers holding the camera.
That'd be even better. It's probably James Johnson.
I don't think James Johnson would take that task on.
I think he would. It's a test of discipline and will.
Probably kick Riley in the face.
That'd be wicked. All right, guys. I think that's all the time we got. I think we've pretty much solved this issue. So, you know, I would love to listen in on these calls. But we'll see. See where it goes. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe on iTunes. We're on Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Anchor, all the major podcast platforms. You can hit us up on Instagram and Twitter at Stretch4Pod. And until next time, peace.